Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah, Chaf Hey. We are starting with the Mishnah on Chaf Hey Amud Aleph. We could put a marker right now in the second parak of the Masechta. From this point going forward in the second parak, we're going to be discussing the mitzvah of the person sitting in the Sukkah. The mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah up until now from daf Beisach of Dalid, the first 3 weeks of the Masechta in terms of daf Yomi, a little bit more. So we learned how to build the Sukkah. So the actual structure of the Sukkah has been the topic of the daf since its very beginning. Now that we have our sukkah and it's built and it's kosher, so now we're going to be talking about the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah. As is normally the case, I can cite a couple of examples, but as is normally the case when talking about the chiv, the obligation to sit in the sukkah, the Mishnah is going to open up with who's exempt from staying in the sukkah, right? The Rambam, the beginning of Hilchas Talmud Torah, so the first halacha is who's exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It is a funny place to start the discussion, but but we're going to be talking here about exemptions. Who is exactly going to be exempt from the mitzvah b'sukkah? So the Mishnah over here is going to give three examples. We start with the Mishnah. Shluchei mitzvah p'tur min ha-sukkah. So halacha number one of the Mishnah, going to be three of them. Halacha number one of the Mishnah is that if you're shlech mitzvah, if you're en route to doing a mitzvah, so that means that it's going to require travel. So now you're traveling, but you're not just traveling. You're traveling to do a mitzvah. So under those circumstances, you're going to have an exemption. You are relieved from the mitzvah of sukkah. We're going to be discussing a lot of that in today's daf. Halacha number two, cholam misham shemein patur min asukah. So you have somebody who's sick and you have somebody who's mishamish. So those people are going to be exempt from the sukkah as well. I'm going to come in and explain that a little bit more. End of today's daf, really more tomorrow's daf. And finally, ochlim v'shosin arai chutz asukah. And if you're going to be having a non-dedicated, non-permanent meal, so that can be done outside the sukkah. You don't have to have a snack outside you don't have to have a snack inside the sukkah. So, but you're allowed to have a snack outside the sukkah. So, those are the three exemptions. A big part of today's daf, and it happens to be one of the more famous popular dafim in all of Shas, and that is the idea that if you're osik b'mitzvah, if you're involved in one mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, you're going to be exempt from another mitzvah, and that obviously is connected with the first halach and the first exemption of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah opens up with that if you're shlech mitzvah, you're en route to doing a mitzvah, so now you're osik b'mitzvah. And as a result of that, you're going to be patur min ha-mitzvah. There's much to discuss in this particular topic. Let's start off with a Rashi in the Mishnah. Rashi in the Mishnah writes, shluchei mitzvah. You're en route to doing a mitzvah. So Rashi writes, holchei bederech mitzvah. So you are en route to doing a mitzvah. Kagon. Rashi over here gives examples. The examples that Rashi gives are interesting. Three examples by Rashi. Each one of them merits its own discussion. We're not going to have its own discussion. This is a daf, and we're going to run through it quickly. But just to highlight some of the points of Rashi. Number one, Talmud Torah. So Rashi says you're en route to learning Torah. And that's an interesting example by Rashi because generally speaking, we know that if you're learning Torah and then there's a mitzvah coming up, so what you do is that you close the sefer and you do the mitzvah. In fact, that's why we learn. In other words, as we know, one of the prime goals of learning is lomod v'lasa. So we daven that every day in the parak right before Shema and in the bracha of Avarabba. So we want to learn so that we know what to do, so that we can do the mitzvah. So under normal circumstances, you don't use the learning of Torah as an exemption from doing a mitzvah. Yet Rashi says that that's going to be an example of being en route to do a mitzvah. So probably what Rashi means is that this isn't just your daily learning, but rather you're going to a specific place, you're learning with a specific person, and it's a specific type of learning. And it's kind of obvious by virtue of the fact that you're traveling. You're traveling to do this type of learning. So we're not talking about just a regular standard learning. It's got to be something special. That's a simple way to look at Rashi. It's a simple way to explain Rashi. Right? There's probably a lot of truth to that. Number two, lahakba panei rabbo. You're going to go visit your Rebbe. Okay, so it's another really interesting example. Going visit your Rebbe. That's a mitzvah? Well, what exactly is that? In other words, is that one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah? Sensibly, the answer is no. Rashi citing that as an example, also really interesting. But I know why Rashi is citing that as an example, because obviously it's Sukkot, which means it's Yontif. And on Yontif, so there's a special mitzvah that you should go visit your Rebbe. In lieu of the fact that we don't have a base of Mikdash and we can't do Aliyah L'Regel, so we do the next best thing. The next best thing is that, look, we don't have a kind of spiritual uplifting where we can go to Yerushalayim. We don't want to have that anymore. We haven't had that for the last two millennia. But the thing that we can do is that we can go visit a Rav. We can go visit a Rebbe. And that will give us another type of Aliyah. So certainly around Sukkot's time, so it would be a appropriate time, attentive. It's an appropriate time to go visit your Rebbe, so that's the second example of Rashi. And the third example of Rashi is Lifto Shvuyim. or you're gonna try to collect money together in order to extract somebody from captivity. So you're trying to do the mitzvah pidyon shvuim. The Gemara elsewhere, the Gemara Baba Basra, the beginning of Baba Basra, speaks about the significance and the importance of this mitzvah. The Gemara really touts this as an important mitzvah for obvious reasons. So you're going around, you're collecting money. So that's another example of a shleich mitzvah. Okay, so that's Rashi. Those are his examples of what exactly it means to be a shleich mitzvah. And so once you're en route to doing a mitzvah, you're going to be exempt, you're going to be relieved from the mitzvah of sukkah. This is all predicated on the principle that once you're involved in one mitzvah, you're going to be receive an exemption from another mitzvah. Okay, so let's start with the Gemara. We're going to come back to Tosfos a little bit later on. First, let's get comfortable and familiar with the Gemara. Minahanimili. The two other exemptions in the Mishnah, but they're really not coming up in today's daf. A little bit later, we'll talk just for a moment about Cholim and Masham Shemehem, but that's really more coming up in tomorrow's daf. So in the meantime, however, our Lima today is really going to revolve around this idea of Osek Min HaMitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah. It's really discussed primarily two places in Shas, this being one of them, and the other one we already saw back in Brachos. Brachos Daf Yud Aleph. So that was the other place where we talked about this topic of Osek B'mitzvah. The Gemara starts off the discussion, Minahani Mili, how do I know this? How do I know that if I'm involved in one mitzvah, so I'm exempt from doing another mitzvah? Okay, that's obviously, the springboard of obviously is our Mishnah, because our Mishnah gives us the example. You have to wonder, I'm just going to give you a thinking question, it's a really good one. In other words, this is not limited to the mitzvah of Sukkah, this is true, this is a truism, it's a rule throughout all of Shas, meaning throughout all the mitzvahs of the Torah. So that you have this idea of osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, that when you're exempt, when you're involved in one, so you're exempt from the other mitzvah. So why did Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi decide that of all the mitzvahs that he's going to go through in all of Shas, so why is he discussing it specifically here by Sukkah? Okay, that's a meta question. It's a thought-provoking question. Okay, the Gemara is not going to ask it. The Gemara is not going to answer it. Nor are the Rishonim going to ask and answer it. But it certainly merits a thought and a discussion. We're not going to have it. But just in terms of why specifically here in our Masechta, by the example of Sukkah, does Rav Yehuda HaNasi want to highlight this idea? Obviously, this is a very general, all-encompassing idea that when you're involved in one mitzvah, you're going to be exempt from doing other mitzvahs. Good. I'm here for all suggestions, but okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. Good. Very good. So Minah and Emilia, how do I know this? Tana Rabbanu. We learned in a Brisa. B'shivtecha beveisecha. Okay. For our first paragraph of Shema. So Pratla Osek b'mitzvah. So the Torah says that when is there a mitzvah to say Shema? Meaning the paragraph of Shema also contains in it the mitzvah to say Shema. So when are you obligated to say Shema? So the pasuk says b'shivtecha beveisecha. When you are sitting in your house. So when you're sitting in your house, so now you have an obligation to say Shema. However, pra'al osik b'mitzvah. So, and that excludes somebody who's involved in a mitzvah. If you're not involved in a mitzvah, so now you're going to be exempt from doing other mitzvahs, notably Shema, but it would be true by any other mitzvah. Uvelechtecha baderech, and now we have another phrase in that pasuk of, and when you're walking, so pra'al chasan, and that would exempt a chasan. A chasan is going to be exempt from doing the mitzvah of Shema. What exactly is the chasan doing right now that he's going to be exempt from saying Shema? He's at his chasna. Okay, great. What is exactly the prevention? What's the patur? So take a look at Rashi over here. So Rashi says over here, I need two phrases because the truth of the matter is that there are two separate categories, says Rashi. If I only had one of the phrases, so kevin de chasan lav beheja kasubikra. Now look, there's no mention of the chasan, meaning the pasuk just simply gives us a general idea of b'shivtecha beveisecha uvelechtecha v'derech. If I only had one phrase, so Rashi says I would not have understood the chasan to be an exemption, because hava amin lo patra kasub ella toreach v'osem alechis mitzvah biyadayim o mehalech lemitzvah. I would have thought that the exemption would encompass somebody who is actively doing a mitzvah. So when you're actively doing a mitzvah, so you're going to be exempt from doing another mitzvah. Because if you think about it, most of the time, what's the chasn doing at his chasna? Nothing. I mean that literally. Literally, he's doing nothing. Meaning most of the time, he's just either standing around or sitting around. Right? He's sitting at the tish, he's standing under the chuppah. But in terms of actively what he's doing, there's not a lot to do. okay, there's going to be simcha later on, and he's going to be dancing later on, but for most of the evening, he's standing or sitting around. So, ela tarid b'machsheves b'ila. However, as you can imagine, we don't have to imagine, we all know, so at the chasna, so there's a lot going on in your mind right now. It requires a lot of mental energy. It doesn't require physical energy, but there's a lot of mental energy. You're concerned. You're worried. And specifically about the be'ilah of that evening. She's a besula. And right, for those of you who went through the beginning of Masechta Ksuvos, you know, that there's a lot of issues, just not only in terms of intimacy, but also legal issues as well. Right? They set up the whole chasna, right? The beginning of Masechta Ksuvos. They set up the whole chasna so that the very next day, if necessary, they'll go to Beis Din. Right. I understand it's not the most romantic way to start a relationship, but that's part of the consideration. She might not be a besula, right? He may not have broken the dam besulim. So there's a lot on his mind at that point in time. So even though he's not actively doing a mitzvah, but he is what we're going to call as category number two, he's tarud b'mitzvah. He's mentally preoccupied with a mitzvah. So lo patar kasav. Had there not been a second phrase, I would have thought that doesn't warrant an exemption. So hilkach mikra yusei rashmina depatar mikriyashma detar b'machsheva b'ila. So that's what we get from the second phrase, is that there really are now two categories that creates an exemption. Category number one is the exemption of being actively involved in a mitzvah, and phrase number two is there to teach me that you, even if you're not actively involved in a mitzvah, but you're so preoccupied in the mitzvah, that also warrants an exemption as well. Truth of the matter is, if you think about the two phrases, really, lechtecha v'derech seems to fit more with the active, and b'shiftecha b'veisecha is really more, seems to be more involved in the passive. That's right. It would seem to work out a little bit better that way, but Rashi over here isn't focused on assigning which phrases for which exemption. Rashi is just simply pointing out that I need two phrases because these two phrases are going to result in these two categories of exemptions. Okay? That's certainly how Rashi understands it. Comes out now that really you're going to receive an exemption of osek b'mitzvah, patam b'mitzvah, either if you're actually osek, or not even if you're osek, but if you're tarud, if you're mentally exhausted, just simply because there's a mitzvah that requires a lot of mental strain. Okay. So the Gemara goes on. We're back in the Gemara. Mikan amru akonis b'sula patam v'samana chayav. And the Gemara says, and from here we learn out that if, in fact, you are, from here we learn now that if, in fact, you are marrying a besula, so then you have this category of tarid b'mitzvah, but if you're marrying an aman, if she's a widow, and now there's no longer a concern, is she a besula, she's not a besula, she's a widow. So you know and it requires less mental energy, it requires less anxiety, and so therefore you are not going to receive that exemption. Okay, my mashma. Gemara says, good. So we have a brisa, we have a drasha. You know the phrases in the Torah are not super clear cut. And the Gemara wants to know, how do we get from the psukim to the halacha? So Amar Rav Huna kederech. Ma derech rishus avko rishus. So, well, if you look at the pasuk, it says that you are a belechtecha v'derech. You're walking on the way. And the Gemara's assumption is that you're walking on your way. That means to say that you're doing something that is totally personal and volitional. But if you're doing something which is demanded, commanded of you, i.e. a mitzvah, so you're going to be exempt. La fuke haide be mitzvah asuk. And which comes to exclude somebody who's doing a mitzvah. So the Gemara says, I don't know. That's really so clear cut in the pasuk. So mi laskin et dekazel dvar mitzvah akam rachman likre. I don't know. Why don't we just interpret the pasuk in the Torah to mean that you're en route to doing a mitzvah, and while you're en route to doing a mitzvah, comes time to say Shema, you will stop and you'll say Shema. Can that be a plausible explanation? So the Gemara says, "Imkein leMakra b'sheves uvaleches." Now, if that's what the Torah's intent was, the Torah would have said either when you're sitting or when you are walking. My b'shiftecha uvalechtecha, but it says it in the possessive. It says that you're doing your sitting, right? It doesn't translate so well into English, but it's a possessive. Or lechtecha, you're doing your walking. So, no, that's when you're doing something that is possessive. That's you. I mean, you're doing something that's volitional, something that you opted to do. Under those circumstances, the Torah demands that, look, you got to stop, you got to say Shema. But if you're doing something where you're not doing something volitionally, i.e., you're commanded to do something, so then you have a legitimate exemption. So we hachi afilu konis as aman anami. Konis is Konis is aman anami. So the Gemara says, really? So that means to say that if I am doing something which I'm obligated to do, or if I am preoccupied, mentally preoccupied, in something that I'm obligated to do. So what's the difference whether a man is marrying a basul or marrying an amana? Either one of them is a mitzvah. So why is it that he only has an exemption when marrying the basula, not the amana? So the Gemara responds, Kones is a basula tarid, Kones amana lo tarid. Yeah, but there, the exemption is not coming from preoccupation. The exemption is coming from anxiety. Now, what kind of anxiety is it? What kind of marriage creates an anxiety? Marriage to basula creates anxiety, like I described earlier. In other words, she's a basula, she's supposed to be a basula. If she's not, we got to go to basin the next day. So that's going to create anxiety. However, if you're marrying an amana, less anxiety. Therefore, there is no exemption under those circumstances.
So that's the question about why you're not exempt marrying an amana, because
you're osik b'mitzvah, but in other words, you don't have the osik. In other words, you're not actively involved. You're standing around most of the time. Okay. And the only exemption is created by the mental preoccupation. And the Gemara is assuming, it's an assumption, the Gemara is assuming that it requires less mental energy. So the Gemara says, V'chol hecha detarid achanami depatra. So the Gemara says, really? So anxiety creates an exemption. So the Gemara at this point in time thinks that it's any kind of anxiety. And we are straddled with anxiety all the time. So alameata tavas v'nasa b'yam detarid achanami depatra. So the Gemara gives a simple example of anxiety, and that is, you lost a fortune of money. Your ship went down. Okay, right? A modern example. Okay, yeah, you made an investment, sunk, and you just lost a lot of money. So understandably, that's going to create a lot of anxiety. So if the exemption is as a result of anxiety, so why don't you just, after every financial loss, why don't you just simply say, look, I need to take a break. I'm just going to take a week off from Shema. And for that matter, from all other mitzvahs, I am tarud. I'm mentally preoccupied. Now, v'chite ma'achinam, and the Gemara says, now for a moment, do you think that we're going to consider it? Now the answer is yes, we are going to consider it for just a moment. The Gemara says, but v'hama rabba abar zavda amarav avel, So, but meanwhile, we know that the person who is in the most amount of anxiety, I don't want to say the most, I don't want to be superlative about it, but somebody who's in a tremendous amount of anxiety is an avil. Somebody who just lost one of his seven relatives and now is sitting shiva. So that person is mentally preoccupied. Totally understandable. Now, on the other hand, however, we know, we have a tradition that such an individual is chayv in all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Not to be confused with an onin. An onin is going to be exempt from the mitzvahs of the Torah, but the onin, as far as exemption is concerned, is from the time of death until the time of burial. And interestingly enough, by the way, you know why the onin is exempt? Because of the principle of osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. Because he right now is currently preoccupied in the burial of his relative. Okay, now, it begs the question, what if you have no involvement whatsoever? What if other people are taking care of it? That's a wonderful question, which I'm not going to address now. But anyway, but I just want to contrast. We're not talking about onin right now. We're talking about avelos. So after the burial, so then you go and you sit shiva. Now, at that point in time, so obviously the shiva is going to require a lot of your mental attention. You are now tarud. And meanwhile, the tradition is that you're still chayv in all mitzvahs. Notable exception to tefillin. Put a bookmark right here, because a little bit later on this morning, we're going to come back to that and try to explain why it is that an avel is going to be exempt from tefillin. Now, most of the time you go to a shiva home, you know the avil puts on tefillin. So what just happened over there? So I'll explain all that better as we get to the Amud Beis of today's daf. But meanwhile, the point is very clear. Mental energy, even though your mental energy is being diverted right now by something which is very distressful, nevertheless, you're going to be obligated for mitzvah. So the Gemara says, so you really haven't explained it well to me. Meaning, so if that's true, so what difference does it make whether you're marrying a basula, you're marrying an amana, and the difference is anxiety? Of marrying a basula over that of an almana. So if it's anxiety, so then anytime there should be anxiety, you're exempt, and it's not true. Anxiety does not create an exemption. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's try it this way. Hachatarid betir de mitzvah, hasam tarid tir de rishos. So the Gemara says, well, we're gonna divide anxiety into two categories. There's anxiety that is just personal anxiety, and there's anxiety that's related to a mitzvah. So if it's the anxiety that's created by a mitzvah, so then that kind of anxiety is going to create an exemption. That's the drasha that we just went through. But if it's anxiety just simply based on personal issues, so that kind of anxiety does not create an exemption. Really interesting. Avel's considered a personal anxiety. Is that true? Meaning, does a person sit avel because of the personal issues that he has. So Rashi points out over here, of course not. Meaning when you're sitting a shiva and you're being noeg nihuge avelos, and that's not personal, that's a mitzvah. So Rashi points out over here, tirdu de rishos, sha'af alpi, Rashi's three lines on the bottom. Sha'af alpi shu chayav linhoga avelos shel ni'ila, rechitza, v'sicha, laharos kavod meso. So it's true that when you're in avel, so there are rules, regulations, restrictions. So you cannot put on shoes, you can't bathe, you can't put oil on. But that is all laharos kavod meso. That's just simply to show respect for the deceased. However, eino chayav lehitzta'er. There's no mitzvah to suffer and be distressed. Now, again, we all understand. In other words, having suffered the loss is obviously going to create the distress. But that's not a mitzvah. Meaning the mitzvah is not to be distressed. Yes, there are going to be restrictions, regulations that are going to affect the avel, but that is not connected to tsa'ar. Tsa'ar is just something that's coming from personal. Totally understandable, and not only understandable, it's appropriate. But nevertheless, that's not coming as a result of the mitzvah. Masha Enke, when you marry a besula, so the stress and anxiety that's created is because of the mitzvah. Okay, so when all said and done, just as a quick summary of our first drasha, so the first drasha comes to teach us that there is an exemption of osik b'mitzvah pater min mitzvah. To explain it like Rashi, it's now broken down into two categories. Either you are actively involved in the mitzvah, that's osik b'mitzvah, or the category number two is your tarud b'mitzvah. Your mental energy right now is being sapped from you because the mitzvah, even though you're not actively doing it, but the mitzvah is going to create anxiety and stress. And under those two circumstances, so now you are going to be working with a legitimate exemption from having to do any other mitzvah. And the Gemara says, well, is that stress and anxiety in general? The Gemara says, no. It has to be specifically stress and anxiety that's created by the mitzvah. And oddly enough, interestingly enough, when it comes to an avel, so obviously there is distress when it comes to an avel, but that's not going to create an exemption because the distress is not a mitzvah. The mitzvah is the nihuge avelos, but the distress is personal, and therefore you do not have an exemption. The big discussion that comes up over here, Tosfos brings it up, and that is this idea that you're osik b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. Tosfos writes over here, second Tosfos on the Amud, he quotes Rashi. I'll just read this quickly. He quotes Rashi. Now it happens to be that we don't have those last words of Rashi. I take it back. We do have those last words of Rashi. Right? Look at the second Rashi in the Mishnah. So Rashi says that not only are you going to be exempt when you're actually walking, but even while you're parked. Okay? Parked. You pull over to the side. I know they didn't have a car. So I'm slightly anachronistic. But in other words, you pull over to the side and you take a rest. So there too, you're going to be exempt from doing the mitzvah of sukkah. Kach perish kuntras. V'chein mashma migamara. And in fact, we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, ho'che ledvar mitzvah p'ter min ha'sukkah b'im b'yom b'im b'layla. So in tomorrow's daf, we're going to learn together that if you're en route to doing a mitzvah, so your exemption from sukkah comes both during the day and at night as well. So umashma afa pisha in hochen ella bayom the azli biyamama valayla vafilo dvar harishos nami patirika diktani bebraisa. So and it sounds like even though the travel itself is only done during the day, nevertheless the exemption comes both day and night. The od of the derev chis of rabba ravuna deganu arkasa desura. And a story we're going to see tomorrow about two rabbis who were traveling, and because they were traveling, they were exempt. And where did they sleep? By the bank of the river. In other words, they didn't sleep in the sukkah. Okay, v'tema. Now, Tosa says, so now it forces me to think about the following. Im yichon l'kayim shneihem, I might peturim. Let's say you can do both, right? In other words, you have two mitzvah opportunities, but you're special. Or for that matter, you're normal. In other words, and it happens to be that the two mitzvahs that are presented in front of you, you can easily do both. Tosa says, I'll give an example. Well, I'm sorry. Before we get to the example, I might peturim. So I don't understand. If you have the capacity and the capability to do both, so you mean to tell me now that you're really going to be exempt from one of them? So the atu adam sheyesh lo tzitzis bedigdo v'tfilin berosho mi mifter bekach mishar mitzvos. Okay, so I have tefillin. All right, happens to be I'm wearing tefillin now. So now you mean to tell me that I'm going to be exempt from all other mitzvos? Meaning, look what's happening. I'm wearing tefillin and I'm learning Torah. Amazing. Okay, so. and I could do both of them. So Tosfos says, I can't entertain the idea that involvement in one is going to create an exemption from the other if I could do both. Hard to imagine. So, mi miftar bekach mishar mitzvos? Okay. Uve perikain bein amudar, and Tosfos goes through a gemara nedarim, which is, gabi amudar na demachzir lo aveda, so alfa pit demahan le pruta, de rav yosef mishum tlo shchicha. Okay. Let's say I have recovered somebody's lost item. But right now, returning to him is just not, I don't have an opportunity immediately, and it'll take a day. Maybe it'll take a week. Maybe it'll take a month. Okay. So the halacha is as follows. Even if I made a neder, then I'm not going to get benefit from him. So nevertheless, what I could do is that I could take care of the aveda. Why would I have thought otherwise? Because taking care of the aveda is going to give me a benefit. What benefit is it going to give me? So while I'm taking care of the aveda, so now someone comes knocking on my door for tzedakah. So now I'm legitimately allowed to ignore the knock. I don't have to give that person money. So now that I am tending to somebody's aveda, I'm doing a mitzvah. So therefore, I'm going to be given an exemption in which I don't have to answer the door in order to give somebody tzedakah. Now the e calls mancha aveda bevesa miftar melemesa rifta laniim ken shrichahi. Now the Gemara describes it as, you know what? Those opportunities are going to come so seldomly, so therefore it's not a concern. Now Tosha says, now imagine, if I'm holding somebody's aveda for a month, and I'm pater for every moment, that's not seldom, that's not lo shchiach, that would mean now for a month straight, for every knock on the door, I can ignore it. So why is the Gemara over there describing as lo shchiach? It must be, says Tosfos, that your exemption is coming not all the time, but some of the time. Tosfos goes on to write, Elavade lo mifter ela b'shashu osek ba, kigon tal shel aveda v'shotcha litzorcha, o behemesh enosin la mizonos, lo shchicha shabos osha, yava ani lishol mimenu. So Tosfos says it must be the following, that when do we have this idea of osek b'mitzvah patur min mitzvah, when I can't do both? Meaning, if it happens to be that while I'm feeding the lost animal, right, I'm right now the caregiver, and while I'm feeding it, then I get a knock on the door, so then I'm going to be exempt. But any other time, while the animal's in my house, and it doesn't need my attention, so I don't have an exemption, of course I got to go answer the door. So Tosa says that the exemption only comes about when I can't do both of them. But if I can, there is no exemption. Therefore, Tosa says that it forces me to explain that even though I agree with Rashi, that you're exempt from the sukkah both when you're traveling during the day and even when you park at night. It must be, says Tosfos, that if you were forced at night to go find the sukkah, it would detract you from your travel. It must be. Because if I could successfully set up a sukkah that night and it doesn't detract from my travel at all, so then obviously I have to do both. So Tosfos comes to the conclusion that this exemption of osek b'mitzvah patur min mitzvah is only when I can't do both. But if I can do both, so then, of course, I got to do both. That's Tosfos' conclusion over here. Now, not all Rishonim are in agreement with Tosfos, and this is a springboard to a much longer discussion and a much longer shir. Specifically, see the Ran over here, who has a different understanding altogether of the exemption of Osek ben Mitzvah, Patam ben Mitzvah. But for our purposes, for Daf, we're just going to focus on Tosfos and just point out the following. So it comes out very funny, according to Tosfos. Now, the whole exemption of Osek ben Mitzvah, Patam ben Mitzvah, is when I can't do both. Okay, what's the alternative? Meaning, so if I can't do both, so now here's this big chiddush of the day. Everyone ready? So if I can't do both and I'm doing one, so then I don't have to do the other. Well, according to Tosfos, I can't do the other. In other words, it's just simply not physically possible. So what's the entire chiddush over here that we're saying that osik ben mitzvah, patam ben mitzvah is only when I can't do both? Okay, thank you. Meaning, if I can't do both, right? What does the Torah expect from me? So here to this Tosfos, you add the Ritva, right? This is traditionally how it's said over. You add the Ritva to Tosfos over here. The Ritva writes, yeah, what is this big exemption of Osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah? So the Ritva actually gives a couple of answers. I'm just going to focus on one of the answers of the Ritva. And he writes that the big deal of Osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah is that while you're engaged in one mitzvah, the other no longer qualifies as a mitzvah. It changes the status of the mitzvah that you are not currently doing right now. In that, it's no longer a mitzvah to you. To you, now it's a reshus. Which means, says the Ritva, now it's a big deal. Now, let's say that you're osik b'mitzvah, you're involved in one mitzvah, there's another mitzvah, but you can't do it right now. So the Ritva writes that you don't have the option right now of stopping to do this mitzvah in order to tend to the other mitzvah. Osik b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah, tells me that while I'm doing this mitzvah, that's not a mitzvah. That's a reshus. That's something where now I have, now because I'm engaged in a mitzvah, and that now has a reshus, that means that I can't drop this one and do that one. This is a mitzvah. That for me right now currently is not. The Ritva says that's the, which is a tremendous chiddush, but that's it. That's a chiddush of our Gemara. According to the Ritva, it fits in well into the approach of Tosfos. Okay, good. There's a lot more to discuss on this issue, but just the basics, if you will. There's just the beginnings. We go back to the Gemara. We are on Chaf Amud Aleph. We're four lines from the bottom of the Amud. V'ha'osek b'mitzvah patam b'mitzvah me'acha nafka me'asam nafka. So the Gemara says, now you quoted one source of this concept of osek b'mitzvah patam b'mitzvah. It happens to be that there's another source as well. D'tanya will enter the price of ayu anashim asher ayu tamim l'nefesh adam. So we're in Parshas Baloscha. So there was a collective group of people who were unable to offer Karban Pesach because they were tamei. Now, osam anashim mihayu. So the Bryce over here tells us, who are these people? So the Bryce over here is going to have three opinions. No, say, I want to show Yosef how you differ Rav Yosef Aglili. So according to Rav Yosef Aglili, it was those who were transporting the bones of Yosef. So Yosef Hatzadik bones are being transported. We know Moshe took the responsibility of doing so, but then he deputized others to actually do it. And so they were Tamil and Nefesh Adam. That's one opinion. Rabbi Kiva Omer, we're on top of Amud Beis, Mishael, the El Safan Hayushayu, Oskim, Benadav Aviu. So this comes at the death of Nadav and Aviu. Death of Nadav and Aviu takes place on the first day of Nisan. So, and they died. Now it is a discussion in terms of how exactly they died. Ish came down in Hashemayim and burned them. There's a discussion. Was an internal burning? Was an external burning? If it's an external burning, so what remains are we talking about? Anyway, let's assume, and by the way, the issues I just raised, Tosfos raises them, but let's just assume right now, just to say it a little bit simply, is that the remains were there, and now, so what, who was called on were the cousins to go ahead and to take care of the mace, and that is Mishael ve'El Tzafan. So they took care of it, and so therefore they were the ones that were tummy. That's Rabbi Kiva. And Rabbi Yitzhak Omer, and Rabbi Yitzhak says, I reject both of the above positions. I don't understand. The ones who are transporting Yosef's body, so they encamped for a long time. There was plenty of time up to Pesach in which they could have treated their tumah. Right, you go through a process of the paraduma. It's a 7-day process. Plenty of time for them to take care of it. Even if it was the Mishael ve'El Tzafan who was taking care of their cousins, the remains of their cousins. That occurred on the first day of Nisan. There are 14 days remaining until Karban Pesach.
Did they have access to Paradumum and a mikvah?
Presumably, yes. And mikvah, yeah. The Ber Miriam, right, the Midrashim talk about this. The Ber Miriam provided that for them not just water, but also a mikvah as well. So, yeah, the Gemara's assumption is they could have taken care of it. Okay. So there was plenty of time. So, Hayuchon Litayr. Ella Oskim. Bemeis mitzvah hayu. It's Rabbi Yitzhak says it's none of the above. It's just simply nondescript. Now, the Gemara uses the word meis mitzvah. Rashi says don't take it literally. Meis mitzvah over here just simply means that there were people who had the occasion, on the unfortunate occasion, to bury, in which shchal shvi shalahem shelios berav Pesach, and it happens to be that they were 7 days from the 14th day of Nisan, which means to say that if they would have gone through the tahara process, it would come out now that their 7th day of Tahara would be on the 14th day of Nisan. Now, how do I know that? What clue do we have that tips us off? The Pasuk says, V'lo yachlu asos ha-Pesach b'yamahu. Pasuk says that they couldn't offer the Karban Pesach on that day. So b'yamahu en yichon la'asos, halamachar yichon la'asos. Which means on that day they couldn't have done it, but had it been 1 day earlier, so then they could have done it. Now, on top of that, Rashi over here supplements us with a little bit more information, and that is that there's a discussion we had back in Pesachim, meaning if you think about it, if it's the 7th day of the Tahara process, when are they going to be able to eat Karban Pesach? That night. Like everybody else. But there is a discussion, a debate in the Gemara in Pesachim, is that if on the day of the 14th, you are not available, you're not Tahor, even though you're going to be Tahor that evening, are you in a position to offer Karban Pesach? Now, you yourself won't be able to do so, but can you send a shlich to do so? a discussion, a debate. We are assuming right now that you can't. That because today you are unavailable to offer Karban Pesach, nobody can offer on your behalf as well. Okay, so the source basically says the following. According to Rabbi Yitzchak, we're assuming like Rabbi Yitzchak right now, that they knew, in other words, they just look at the calendar, they knew now that if they tend to the mace, they are going to or no longer be able to offer Karban Pesach. So what's the conclusion? Osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. Because now they are currently having a mitzvah opportunity, so they're involved in it. So you do the mitzvah that's currently available, even though it's going to create an exemption of a mitzvah coming up in the very near future. And you know it's going to create an exemption.
How come we don't say that the mitzvah is one of those super mitzvahs? That even
again, that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, don't take the words mace mitzvah literally. Mace mitzvah over here just simply means that they had an opportunity to bury. But doesn't, right, it's a great question, but Rashi sidesteps, because Rashi says it just means that it's a mace that they have to bury. So tzricha. So the Gemara says, okay, so now what we have are two sources. One source is the Pasuk in Shema, b'shifteha b'vizecha l'tchavaderach. Another source is those who were tamei for Pesach Rishon, and then ultimately got pushed off to Pesach Sheni, but that's the second source. The Gemara says, great. There are two sources, and they're both necessary. Why? You see, in the case of Karban Pesach, if that were my only source, so then here's what I would have said. If one mitzvah comes up now, even though it's going to create an exemption of a future mitzvah, okay, so do the mitzvah that's current, and even though it creates an exemption for a later one. You see, in the case of Shema, and specifically by the Chassan, so now what? So now, the mitzvah of Shema is here, and he has an opportunity to say it. Ah, but he's tarred b'mitzvah. So what we gained in the source of b'shiptecha b'vesecha v'latecha v'derech is that even though you are currently available to do the other mitzvah right now, you're going to be exempt. So that's the strength of the b'shiptecha b'vesecha. Now what's the strength of the second source? V'iyash minan ha'chemishim d'leka karis av'ahasam d'ika karis emalot tzricha. Karban Pesach is a big deal. Karban Pesach is one of the two mitzvahs in the Torah, two positive commandments of the Torah. Well, failure to do those positive commandments will result in karis. So one could have made the argument, you could have thought that, okay, you know, I know there's a mace right now, but if I tend to the mace, I'm going to lose out on not just a mitzvah, but a karis-bearing mitzvah. One would have suggested, no, don't do that. So the second source is coming to tell me is that you do not weigh the mitzvos. If you have a mitzvah to do now, even though it's going to create an exemption of a future mitzvah, even though that future mitzvah is an issur kares, it's a chiyuv kares, so nevertheless, you do the mitzvah now. Okay? Ad kan. Takes us to the first part of today's daf, and the topic, big topic, we just scratched the surface, is the idea of osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. So, and it goes back to our Mishnah, those are the people that are en route to doing a mitzvah, so they're going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Sukkah. Okay, yeah, it's going to be nivel. I totally agreed. Gufa, Amar Rabbi Abba Barzav Damar Rav Avachai B'chol Mitzvos Amrus B'Torah Chutz Mitzvon Shari Nemar Behen Pe'er. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, look, we just brought it up incidentally in the first discussion of today's daf. So let's go back. Let's just explain it a little bit more. Let's discuss it a little bit more. And Avos Chayv and all the mitzvahs of the Torah, with notable exception to the mitzvah of Tefillin. How do I know that? Mida Amar Le Rechman Li Cheskel. So it's based on a pasuk in Navi. Kosh Baruch Hu says to Yecheskel, Peircha Chavush Alecha. Okay, many times the Nevi'im are basically used as examples to the Jewish people. In other words, when they are predicting, forecasting tragedy and doom, so what a Kosh Baruch Hu wants them to do is not just speak about it, but to demonstrate and to show. And though, despite the fact that Yecheskel was going to be an Avel, HaKosh Baruch Hu says, Peircha Chavush Alecha. So what you're going to do is you're going to put on your pair, you're going to put on your crown. So the tefillin happens to be our crown. So Yecheskel was told to do so, which is abnormal, that's strange behavior. And yeah, in other words, and that's exactly the point. Yecheskel was instructed to engage in strange behavior. But that means, atu demechayv tava kolam epetire. So that means to say that he is the exception. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make an example of Yecheskel, which means that the default is that an Avel is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. V'hani mila b'yom rishon. Now that's true on day one. Yechsiv, the pasuk says, Va'achariasa, Va'acharisa, Kiyomar. The first day of Avelis is the most bitter. That's the day in which you are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. After the first day, so you're no longer exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. So we just learned together that there is an exemption of tefillin, but that's only for day number one of Avelis. There's a further discussion to be had, which we're not going to have. I'll just mention it, that there is a discussion. What if the first day of Avelis also happens not to be the Yom HaMisa, right? Nowadays, most of the time, that's the case. In other words, the day of death and the Yom HaKvur are not the same day, right? Back in the day, it was much more common that burial occurred on the Yom HaMisa. So there is a discussion to be had. There is a discussion that's had regarding what if there is a lag between the Yom HaMisa and the Yom and the first day of Avelis, meaning in the Yom HaKvura. Is there going to be an exemption of tefillin on such a scenario? You will ask your Rav, because there is a discussion on that particular topic. By the way, that's why most of the time you're in the base Avel, you're a post day number one, and so that's why you're always going to be finding the Avel wearing tefillin, because the exemption is only on day one, and even then, a further sub-discussion of what happens when the Yom HaMisa and Yom HaKvura are not the same day. No, they're talking about Avelis, not Aninus. Good, that's an Onin, right? We talked about that a little bit earlier, but we're talking about Avelis. We're not talking about Aninus. The Amar Rabbi Barba Barzav, the Amar Rav Avachai Besukah. So, and then, just let's add to that, that an Avel is also going to be Chayv in the Mitzvah of Sukkah, Napshita. Now the Gemara says, now, obviously, meaning we established that an Avel is Chayv in all the Mitzvahs of the Torah. So now you're telling me that he's Chayv in Sukkah, like, we would have known that, right? So no, Ma'u detema hova amar Rabbi Abba Barzav da amar Rav Mitzar Patur min Sukkah. So we know that a Mitzar is exempt from the Mitzvah of Sukkah. So Hainami Mitzar who? So okay, so the Avel's Mitzar. So the Gemara says no. Kamash Malan Hani Mila Tzar de Memela Avahacha Iu de Kam Mitzar Nafshe Ibayla Li Yisuve Daite. So the Gemara says no. When do we have this Patur, this exemption of being a Mitzar, being uncomfortable? When the Sukkah creates discomfort. That's when you have an exemption of being Mitzar. But if it's a personal issue, now again, go back to a point that I made earlier, an understandable personal issue. In other words, you just experienced loss. But that's still, as far as the mitzvah of Sukkah is concerned, that doesn't classify, that doesn't categorize under this exemption of being mitzta'er. Mitzta'er is only when it comes as a result of the Sukkah, not of the result of your personal issues. And so therefore, the Gemara says, and obviously easier said than done, but the Gemara says is that what you're expected to do is basically calm yourself down and go into the sukkah, and to the best of your ability, be mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah.
So tirda and tsar are completely separate concepts?
No, not necessarily, meaning...
Tirda's not a subcategory.
Right, tirda, in other words, the Gemara, the point on the Amud Aleph of today is that the tirda of Avelis is not a mitzvah. And so therefore... That's not going to create an exemption of mitzvahs in general. The second point today in the Amud Beis is that by Sukkah there is an exemption, a special exemption vis-a-vis Sukkah of being a mitzvah. But when it comes to Avelos, even though you are in Sa'ar, those two, the Sa'ar of Avelos and the Ptur Mitzvah of Sukkah, are not connected. They're disconnected. And so therefore, you're not in this category of mitzvah Ptur min Sukkah. Okay. Okay, and as long as we're quoting halachas from Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda in the name of Rav, so the Gemara now goes for the trifecta, and that is that if you have a chassan and all of his best men, I know that's a modern term, but basically that's what we're describing. So v'chol b'nei achopa p'tur min asukah kol shiva. So they're going to be exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Why? My taima mishum debay lemichtei. Because there's a mitzvah to be mesamech the chassan, and that's going to be true for all of his shiva yemei mishta. What we call sheva brachos. Now the just as a technical point, which Rashi makes, is that you're not allowed to marry on yantiv, you're not allowed to marry on chol hamoed, right? That we're going to learn that together in moed katan. Hopefully, if I remember correctly, daf ches. So the right to ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha, but that's fine. The person got married immediately prior to Yontif. Okay, so a lot of the days of his Sheva Brachos is now going to cut into Sukkos. And he's going to have an exemption of Sukkos. So the Gemara is going to struggle to try to understand. Why? Because he has to rejoice. So the Gemara says, I got this great idea. Let's move the Sheva Brachos into the Sukkah. Right? Crazy. V'lech lo besukkah, v'lech lo besukkah. So that's the Gemara's question. Okay, so I get no credit. So the Gemara says, so move the Sheva Brachos into the sukkah. So ain't simcha ela b'chuppah. So the Gemara says, no, because the simcha has to be b'chuppah. Now we use the term chuppah over here, the way we use it and the way the Gemara is using it is clearly not the same. So when we use the term chuppah, that's the canopy in which they get married under. Okay, after the wedding is over, they never go back to the wedding hall. Oh, let's go back to the chuppah. That's not what the Gemara is making reference to over here. The term chuppah, as the Gemara is using it, is basically their new home. Okay, there is either they're renting or they're buying. I'm not really sure how the business arrangement works, but basically there's a new home that they have for themselves. So that is being described as the chuppah, the new house of the newlywed. Fine. So the Gemara says that the simcha only comes in the chuppah. And Tosfos over here, based on this line of the Gemara, has a really interesting discussion. You know that when you're at Sheva Brachos, so there is a special benching that you say at Sheva Brachos. And it includes the phrase, Vahasha Simcha Bimono, that here we're at a point of rejoicing. So does that mean that you only say this when you're in the chuppah? Again, not in the modern term usage of the term chuppah, but the way the Gemara referenced it, meaning the newlywed's house. So Tosfos over here has that discussion. Maybe the special benching is said only in the newlywed's house. That's not our practice. We all know. Meaning we do the special benching wherever the chassan and kala are during the week of Sheva Brachos. But anyway, but at least you know now that there is something to be said about only doing the simcha b'mono only in the house of the chuppah. But anyway, the Gemara says, ain't simcha ela b'chuppah. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm still not clear about why they're exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. V'lech l'b'sukkah, v'lech l'b'chuppah. So the Gemara says, here we go, crazy ideas. So why don't we eat in the sukkah and then we'll go to the newlywed's house and we'll rejoice over there. So the Gemara says, what? You're gonna eat elsewhere? The Gemara says, that's crazy. Ain't simcha ela b'makom suda. Okay. How can you be happy without food? Okay. It's hardwired into us. It's not, right? We laugh. It's part joke, but it's also, the Gemara says it with no irony. In other words, it's serious. That, in other words, part of the simcha is having food over there. So the Gemara says, v'lav d'chuppah b'sukkah. So the Gemara says, okay, again, the Gemara is really struggling. So, okay, fine. So move everything to the sukkah. Move the food to the sukkah. Move their residence to the sukkah. Just move the whole thing to the sukkah. I'm not getting it. So Abai Amar Mishum Yichud. So Abai says the problem is that there's going to be Yichud consideration. Now, admittedly, this is going to be hard to explain. I'll try. So the Yichud consideration over here is the following, is that the sukkah is not that particularly big. There are not that many people over there. So let's say now that it's you and your new kala, and it happens to be right now there's one other guy there. And you have to use the facility. So you're going to be leaving the sukkah. So it opens up a possibility of yichud. That's one concern. Rava Amar Mishum Tzar Chassan. Rava says also it's just going to be distressful for the chassan. Distressful for the chassan, why? And Rashi explains over here. In other words, he's with his new wife and they really enjoy each other. And they want a more private setting. Now, granted, by the way, again, it's kind of hard to understand a private setting with your friends. Yes. And he wants a more private setting. The sukkah does not create for a private setting. Rashi describes over here, you know, the sukkah, the whole third wall is open, the whole fourth wall of the sukkah is open. You can even have part of the third wall open. The sukkah is not a private entity. And it's really hard to have a private moment in a sukkah. And for the chassan, he wants more private moments. Okay. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says now, these two explanations, it's going to be a nafkamina. And that is, what if it happens to be that there's a lot of traffic going through the sukkah? So Laman Darmi Mishum Yichud Leika, if your concern was Yichud, but there's a lot of traffic, so then there's no Yichud concern. And Laman Darmi Mishum Tsar Chassanika. Now, if the concern is the privacy of the chassan, well, that really is a concern. Meaning the chassan wants he wants a more private environment, and the sukkah does not allow for a private environment. That would be a nafkamina based on these two reasons that are given. Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Give us a chance to review. We did a Mishnah, the Mishnah over here, introducing us to the broader topic. The second half of the second parak of sukkah introduces us to the broader topic of now the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah. Who is obligated? And we start off with who is exempt. Three exemptions mentioned in the Mishnah. The shliach mitzvah, the chola, and those tending to the chola, and when you're snacking. So those are the three times when there's an exemption for the mitzvah of sukkah. Our discussion today primarily revolved around the first of the exemptions, which is you're en route to doing a mitzvah. Why is it that you're patur from the mitzvah of sukkah? Because of the principle of osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. All said and done, we went through two sources in the Torah that teaches us the principle of osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Why two sources? The Gemara goes over the tzrichusa, the necessity of both of those reasons. We touched on today a really fundamental discussion of what exactly is this exemption of osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, that when you're involved in one mitzvah, you're going to be exempt from doing another mitzvah. Tosfos clearly is of the position that's only talking about a case where I can't do both. But if I can do both, so then I should do both, and I need to do both. That's Tosfos, and much to discuss within the Tosfos itself. We happen to be that today. We went through a good part of the Tosfos. And then, second part of today's daf, we covered a number of halachas that are said over by Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda in the name of Rav. Notably, number one, an avos chayv in all the mitzvahs of the Torah, with notable exception to tefillin, the exemption of a tefillin by the avil is only on day one, based on a pasuk in Yecheskel, based on a pasuk in Amos. Number two, a mitzta'er is going to be exempt from the sukkah. Despite the fact that a mitzta'er is going to be exempt from the sukkah, nevertheless, an avil is going to be chayv in the sukkah. He's in tsa'ar. The p'tur mitzta'er of sukkah is not connected to his own personal tsa'ar. And finally, number three, the chassan and his entourage are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Why? It's not easy to say over why. it's tricky. But the basic answer of the Gemara is one of two concerns. Number one, it may lead to a problem v'yichud. Number two, the sukkah is not a private environment, and the chassan needs a private environment with his wife.